tonight I'm doing a little study here, and this is kind of all rolls in this together. But as I was watching it, I was watching a show the other day, and it had a very intelligent woman with a, you know, just a run-of-the-mill country mom. And the intelligent woman was a psychiatrist, and she was very, very knowledgeable about things. And the other woman was a Christian, and she was just as plain and simple as could possibly be. And they started talking about it, and the intelligent woman was amused how people could believe in the Bible. And so she thought it entertaining that somebody actually believed in it. And so they were talking, and she goes, "Well, I can prove to you that the Bible's not accurate." And her question was, what did the lions eat on the ark? And I had to laugh because the woman goes, "Well, of course, all the dead people that were floating in the water." You know, I'm like, "Well, okay, not accurate." But when we hear things like this, the whole thing was to belittle you, to put you, to silence you, because you really believe in this? You really believe in that? And it's the opposite. We should be taking the exact opposite approach. So going through that, I'm like going, okay, how do we answer that? When we have these questions, when these types of things come up, what's our response? And where do we show somebody in the Bible? Okay, where do we go through to do it? So that's what we're going to do here tonight. We're going to go through a couple of those. What do the lions eat on the ark? Okay. My thing would be, a question would be, respond back to them. Let me answer your question with another question. How many of each animal were on the ark? Okay, you're going to find out how much a person really knows or doesn't know. Okay. So I'm going to go to it here real quick. Everybody, I've given you the numbers there. If you're already there, Melania, did you go to it?
Let's see.
7, 2, and 3 of Genesis, and I'm going to read this in chapter 7, verses 2 and 3, and it starts off here, kind of in the middle of the column. "Of all the clean beasts shalt thou take to thee by sevens, a male and his female, and of the beasts that are not clean shall be two, a male and his female, and of all the birds of the heaven by sevens, male and female, to keep alive a seed on the face of the earth." Okay, so first of all, there's not just two. So that whole myth that if one of them dies on the ark, then that's the end of it, okay, is not correct. Okay. Next one here. This was kind of an interesting one as well. I'm going to try to show some things in here that people, that most Christians don't understand and most Christians don't know. That the governmental change, the things that changed before the flood, after the flood, when Adam and Eve came about, okay, what happened, and then what led up to the flood, what happened, and then what happened after the flood. And so when was the first altar built for Yahweh? Anybody know?
No, after the flood.
That's correct. So let's go to Genesis 8. Flip over here to the page. 8:20, if somebody would read that for me.
I will.
Okay, nice and loud.
"And Noah
builded
an altar to Yahweh and took all the clean beasts and of all the clean birds and caused ascending sacrifices to go up on the altar."
That's it. Okay, so here we have it. Not only could you not do that if there was only two of a kind, you just wipe out species. And so when we look at this, this is very interesting as far as there was none before. Now, that being said, I'm going to throw out some caveats. What happened, because as I was going through and studying this, there was all kinds of stuff that I found on the internet about how wicked Yahweh is for killing all these people, all these innocent people. Okay, again, this is not knowing the Word. And knowing the Word says what? That the people were wicked. Every thought continually. That is impossible unless you have been infected. And remember, it says the sons of Yahweh, okay, messengers, evil messengers, took wives. And of this, this offspring that came about, this is what led up to this. It was going to completely wipe out the Christ line without doing this. This was mandatory. It was mandatory. It was the last stop that had to be done. Okay? So when there was probably some of those wicked people who were killing animals and eating animals. But I'm going to show, as we go through the Word, that the change between the animals took place after the ark. And there was a completely different setup before they came and got off the ark and had this for the altar. Okay, a completely different setup. And so we're going to see that as we go through here. But when you look in the Bullinger's Companion Bible, here's where it shows. "And Noah builded an altar unto the Lord," or unto Yahweh, "and took of every clean beast." And if you look over there on the note, altar, the first mention in the Scriptures. Okay, things change. Now, when Adam and Eve sinned, Yahweh provided the basically the skins for a sacrifice. Okay, this time now it's going to change, and the governmental change is going to take place. And so we're going to kind of take a look at that. Flip over the, well, I guess we're on the page here, 9:2-4. And if I could get an adult to read that for me, please.
Let the fear of you and the dread of you be upon every living creature of the earth and upon every bird of the heavens, over everything that moveth along on the ground, and even all the fishes of the sea. Into your hand have they been given. The next verse?
Yes, please, all the way through 4.
Okay. As for every moving thing that hath life, yours shall it be for food. Like the green herb, even, or have I given you all things. Yet flesh with the life thereof, the blood thereof, shall we not eat.
Shall we not eat, and that's it. And so when you see this here, what was the mandate here for Yahweh? There was no meat eating for people. There was no meat eating. Okay, as he says there here in verse 3, and as for every moving thing that life... let's go back up here to... 2, okay, and of the fear of, and let the fear of you and the dread, and if you look down there at the note of A, the terror of you be upon every living creature. This is a first. That did not happen before, okay? It did not happen before, and why, I'm going to show you, but there was no dread, there was no fear. The animals had nothing to fear. There was no predators, there was nothing to chase them down, okay? There was no fear. It has now been installed when they came off of the ark. And along with that, it says, over everything moveth, and upon all fish, into your hand have been given you. As for every moving thing that hath life, yours shall it be for food. Now, everything here, as far as the Levitical law, will change this, but has been given for food, like the green herb. In other words, the green herb was what they had to eat before this. Now it's changed, but then there's a specification that no blood. Okay, nothing with, no blood with that. And so what changed now is the characteristics of the animals. The animals change now. It's a whole characteristic change. So this is new and it's not in Adam. When we look at what was said to Adam, this is Genesis 2:19. You don't have to go there. I'm just going to read it from the screen. Now, Yahweh Elohim had formed from the ground every living thing of the field and every bird of the heavens, which he brought in unto man, that he might see what he should call it. And whatsoever the man should call it, any living soul or living nephesh that should be of the name thereof. So the man gave names unto the tame beasts and unto the birds of the heaven and unto all the wild beasts of the field. This was a different relationship, okay? The animal structure now has changed. And this is from one of the notes there that I came across there as I was doing this. Yahweh placed all living animals under Adam's power. He names them. In Genesis 9:2-5, where we just read, Yahweh is preserver, okay? But the animals are merely placed in Noah's power. And fear, the character of relationship. Noah is their destroyer whom they will fear. Not just Noah, man, this changed. The whole thing changed. Is their destroyer for fear. Blood is put in the hand of a way of government for bloodshedding, life-taking, was in the earth. It is clearly a setting the whole thing upon a new system and footing. It all changed, and people don't understand that. So when people see that and they think to themselves, well, these animals had to be eating before then. How could you do that? It makes no sense. And a lot of believers that I've come across get completely tripped up and want to bypass the whole ark thing altogether. Just bypass it. It's easier to step around it. But when somebody is dragging that out and throwing that snare in front of you, right, to bait you, you come back with the truth and show somebody, and they'll be like, going, if nothing else, the person that had their eyes open will be like me when I found out that there were 7 pairs of clean beasts. Really? Where does it say that? I've never been taught that. Right. Every picture you see, it all is the same. Genesis 1, let's go to it here. 1:28. All right. Somebody read 28 and 30 for me, please.
And God blessed them, and God said to them, be fruitful and multiply and fill the earth and subdue it and have
dominion
over fish of the sea and over the bird of the heavens and over every living thing that moveth on the land.
And I'll read 29 and 30. Thank you, sweetheart. Very good. And Elohim said, lo, I have given to you every herb yielding seed which is on the face of the land, and every tree wherein the fruit of a tree yieldeth seed. To you shall it be for food, and to every living thing. Here's the big one. We already know that the man is for the herbs. and to every, in verse 30, and to every living thing of the land, or earth, okay, of dry land, to every bird of the heavens, and to everything that moveth on the land, or the dry earth wherein is a living soul, every green herb for food. Animals did not eat meat. Now, if that raises a whole different question to somebody, so be it. Now you have the choice. Do you believe the word or do you not believe the word? Okay, because it's pretty specific that it says that. So the nature changed. It all changed from this point. The word food that I have underlined in it, it's ogla, food, fuel, meat, eating. It basically just means to consume. Okay, anything that Yahweh's determined edible. All right, let's go to Isaiah 11. What page are we on, Melania?
658.
Nice. Old 1 through 10. And I will read it once everybody's there. Page 658. Bottom left. All right, good. Here we go. Starting verse 1 through 10. But there shall come forth a shoot from the stock of Jesse. So what we're looking at is we're looking at governmental changes and what's happened. And so when people look at the ark and they know what was the forecast of what was going to happen, it was hard to believe what was going to happen. A second note I want to kind of go back over, and I didn't put it in here. I took it out for saving of time. They recently discovered that there is three times the amount of water in the ocean underneath the mantle. Okay, this is recent. This was last year. Does that really make a difference?
No.
No, it doesn't, because the word says that the fountains, the deep fountains of the earth were opened up and the rain came down. The first rain that came down. Okay? And so people will be like going, oh, come on, there's no way. Because what it say? 15 cubits above the highest mountain. That's 20 feet over the top of Mount Everest. That's a lot of water. That's a whole lot of water. People are like going, there's no way. It couldn't rain enough or hard enough for that to happen. And I'm like going, well, it did. And A and B, the fountains broke loose and it just sprung forth. And it probably flooded pretty darn quick and just disintegrated everything, got rid of it all, except for the ark, which was lifted up. And so when we see these, it was prophesied this would happen. What do you think they did to Noah? They ridiculed him and mocked him for this. And you can see, what's this all about? Why? Because they didn't see what was going to happen. The same way we're going to see this here in Isaiah, when he's prophesying about something. So I'm starting in verse 1. But there shall come forth a shoot from the stock of Jesse, and a sprout from his roots shall bear fruit. And the spirit, or ruah, of Yahweh shall rest upon him. And the ruah, which is the spirit there, the ruah of the wisdom and understanding, the ruah of counsel and might, the ruah of knowledge and reverence of Yahweh. So will he find fragrance in the reverence of Yahweh. And not by sight of his eyes will he judge, nor by the hearing of his ears will he decide, but he will judge with righteousness them who are poor, and decide with equity for the oppressed of the land. And he will smite the land with the scepter of his mouth. I love that, because when we look at things, how things were created, Yahweh spoke the things into creation. Okay, and again, the scepter of his mouth, the speaking of us when we are the body of Christ, and this is what we are talking about right here, the speaking of this. How powerful that is. And if we don't open up our mouths and speak as Christ, then we can't expect to see those things happen. And the breath of his lips will slay the lawless man, and righteousness shall be the girdle of his loins, and the faithfulness of his girdle of his reins. And the wolf shall dwell with the lamb, and the leopard with the kid shall lie down, and the calf and the young lion and the fatling together, with the little child leading them. And the cow and the bear shall find pasture, together shall their young ones lie down, and the lion like the ox shall eat straw, and the suckling child shall caress over the hole of the cobra or asp, yea, over the viper's den hath the weaned child stretched out his hand. They shall not hurt nor destroy in all my holy mountain, for filled is the land with the knowledge of Yahweh, as the waters to the sea form a covering. And there shall come to be in that day a root of Jesse, which shall be standing as an ensign of peoples. Now this is pretty bold, because actually there's a little bit more. Unto him shall nations seek, and his resting place shall be glorious. And so this is a prophecy that Isaiah gives out. And here it is. This is the verse right here. Now, if this is going to be how it's going to be in paradise, where the lion is eating straw, we know that the original paradise, everything was created perfect as well. So why would we think that we see it here, we can't apply that to the paradise that was before? And again, that's where people come out, and if somebody wants to have a hard heart against it, oh, okay, I get you, no problem. No, it's not a big deal. That's okay, brush off it, but if I can show you in the Word, will you believe? And for those people who will listen, they're going to open up their eyes and be like, going, I never even thought of that, never even noticed that. So there's a story of this couple, and I kind of thought this was funny, throw a little bit of humor in here. They were from British Columbia or wherever in Canada, one of those provinces.
What is it? Providences?
Yes, Providenci. And it was middle winter, and they wanted to go to Florida on vacation. And so the husband gets everything set up, and his wife's going to be on a business trip. So he shows up in Florida, flies in Florida, gets there, and he's going to be there a day before his wife. And his wife's going to, when she completes her business trip, she's going to meet him there in Florida. So he gets there, he gets to the hotel, and he checks in, and he goes down to the business center, and he's going to shoot his wife an email. So he gets on there, and he types it out. The only problem was he messed up the email address by one character. Okay, and he sends it out. Okay? Now, across the country in another place, a woman goes to sit down in front of her computer to check her email. And she's getting ready to get on it. And recently, her husband, who was a retired pastor, had passed away. And she still has family at the house. And she gets down at the email and she opens it up. And then she and rolls over backwards and passes out on the floor. And her family runs in there to come see what the heck is going on. So they get her and she's still gasping. And one of them looks up at the computer screen and it says, "My dearest wife. I've arranged a place for us. Everything is set up. And by the way, it is so hot down here." And so, "Dearest husband," she signs it off. And I'm like going, how something changed so fast just from one little mistake that could throw a little tizzy into it. So I never saw the movie Hope Floats. Never really had a desire to. I'm not really into the chick flick thing. But I thought this was kind of neat because as we're going through the crisis, when Isaiah was writing this, things weren't all hunky-dory where everybody was just, you know, the world was kind of in a bad predicament. And so I thought about that and like going, boy, how do you put that? How do you make something rise above when everything else around you is just dropping out like flies? How do you do that? And so I'm like going, well, for crying out loud, we got to be able to position ourselves and be prepared for it to happen. And so when those things come across us and hit us, we're not shocked. It's not like, oh, what just happened? What just took place? No, you laugh the things off. You're like going, oh, for crying out loud. Okay, one more thing. Just bring it on. Come on. I'm ready for you. Okay? Personal journal. I thought this was an interesting little tidbit. Workforce Magazine put together this incredible statistic. Since the beginning of recorded history, the entire world has been at peace less than 8% of the time. Was that a shock?
No.
Is that a shock at all? Okay. In its study, the periodical discovered that of 3,500 plus years of recorded history that they could go back and look, obviously they're getting most of that from the Word, only 286 years saw peace. Okay, where there was no fighting, no conflicts, no rule, one person, you know, enslaving another one in there. And so it's not uncommon to see this. And so when we look at it and we see things and we get bombarded by what's taking place in the media and what's taking place in our lives, and we're just like going, golly, it's just weighing down. And it does. It does weigh down on you to be able to shed off from that and let the old man off and continually just keep putting on the new man. So the rod, A-Rod of Jesse, and this isn't the baseball player, okay, A-Rod, this is a rod of Jesse. And this is kind of what's neat about this, because when this was told, what do you think Isaiah wanted to do? Meet this dude.
Yeah.
For crying out loud, the same way the prophets with Christ. We're coming back to start this kingdom. We're ready. Let's do this. Let's have this now.
Yeah.
We know what's coming, and yet we really don't want to wait. We really don't want to wait, and it's absolutely understandable. Isaiah's prophecy, during this time, some of the things that you see, captivity of Israel and the coming captivity of Judah. Yay, that's all good, huh? Carried away by the Babylonians. The coming of the Messiah that's being told about. Okay, this is some of those things that you're like, hey, this is a hope. This is a hope that we have, that you tell the people, and what does this do? It energizes. It's like, you know, it's like the kids when you're on a car ride. Are we almost there? Are we almost there?
Yeah.
And you can really tell them, we're going to be there in 10 minutes. Okay, and then the kids, it gives them hope. Hey, 10 minutes, I can make that. How long is 10 minutes? So, getting back to the job. Jerusalem to be destroyed. Years passed, the prophet was becoming old. And the whole time he's preaching the hope and the promises, and yet not in them, not living in them. Even though he had had reason to lose hope, he declared to the people he should never give it up. The fulfillment of the glorious coming of the Messiah he longed to see would delay for another 700 years.
Wow.
Never saw it. So, everybody now, we look back at that and we're like going, yeah, 700 years, we knew that the Messiah was coming. Is that a shock? No, of course it's not a shock. He prophesied about it and it came. And how specific that you're going to name the person who's going to come from, the Father who's going to come from. That's pretty impressive, 700 years in advance. Okay, that this is going to be the Christ line and that you will be watching for that. And from this, here's what's going to stem and here's the glory and the hope. 2,000 years now for us and the people who want to mock the Christians. Where's your Messiah? You think he forgot about you? These are the kind of things, the same things that come back. The same things that I could see 500 years after Isaiah's prophecy, as people read the scrolls, would be like going, well, obviously he was wrong. He was wrong because 500 years later, where is this guy? Okay. Same way, 2,000 years now, and here we are where we're like going, do people lose hope? And we see that within some of the Christian community, that people are. Well, I don't know what's going on. We would have thought that something would have happened. Or they look at these signs and everything, and if you know the word, and you know where it is in the administrations, and the administration that we're in, these signs are not for us. They're not for us, okay? We are the body of Christ, and we are exempt. We are an insert into the Word, and we will be expelled out of the Word and pulled back. And so again, same way, I look at that where you have to show people and tell people that. I hear too many times in the teaching where people talk about it, well, during this and blah, 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 and they don't understand what the Word says. Go to 1 John.
Already there.
You are already there. You are quick.
No, I'm in Peter.
Uh-oh. Cheater. Okay, 1 John 3, 1 through 3. And can I get an adult there to read that? We're going to page, what page there, Melania?
246.
243. Oh, wait, no,
246. That's right. 1 through 3, somebody, please.
There was, go ahead.
Behold.
There was, however, a man.
Behold, on page, on 1 John. 1 John 3, 1 through 3.
I'm sorry. Go ahead. I'm in Big John.
Behold, what manner of love the Father hath bestowed upon us. The children of Yahweh we shall be called, and such we are. Therefore, the world understandeth us not, because it understood not him. Beloved, now are we children of Yahweh, and not yet hath it been made manifest that we shall be. We know that, if it should be made manifest, like unto him shall we be. Because we shall see him just as he is. And whosoever hath this hope on him is purifying himself just as he is pure.
That's that. That's exactly it. And so we are called children of Yahweh. Children of Yahweh, that's what he's referring to here. Behold the manner. Okay? And so when we look at this here, the world understands us not because it understood not. And that basically, if you look down there in that note, it's supposed to be not in him. Not in him. So the world did not understand or chose not to understand in Yahweh. Okay, so why should we be surprised when they don't the same for us? Okay, we're no different. Okay, we're no different from that. We're going to go through those same things where we're fighting against those. The happiness of most people is not ruined by great catastrophes or fatal errors, but by the repetition of slowly destructive little things. And I really thought about that. And I'm like, oh boy, how true that is. That those things that just over and over and over again, those little repetition things that just nag and keep digging and pointing into you, where it just starts to frustrate you and you'll become overwhelmed. And you'll even sometimes give way to those things and take a wide berth around them just to avoid something like that. Where, you know, somebody at work where they're bothering you or something that you're trying to fight off or fight away from, and instead of just facing it, confronting it, head straight on. Just like Elijah's story of Goliath, where he ran at him unarmed. Yeah. Do you guys know that? David ran at him unarmed. It was when he was running that he reaches in and takes the rock out. He ran at him unarmed and then loaded and took him down. I'm like, well, that's the right attitude. Okay, that's the right attitude. And that's a big thing. That's not one of the little things we're talking about, but the little things that get under our skin that start to wear us down and over time. It's the same way that if you hear something over and over and over again, it almost becomes to where you start to accept that. And you see that in the Word. You see that with all kinds of things. Where somebody tries to break somebody, you know, and they'll do that. They'll just keep saying these things over and over again. But this was I like this guy. He's a French pastor, and he put a lot of stuff into thought and having your thought to what you believe in and not just taking things and knowing what the Word says and understanding what it is and be able to put your thought to it. Wayne Gretzky, what a dude. In an interview, he was asked how he managed to become the best goal scorer in the history of the game. Yeah, I always loved the interviews that he had because he'd always say something really crazy. He was married, and I'll never forget one time they were talking about it. It was a big sports interview thing. It's a little side note here. But he was talking about it, and he goes, you know, boxers that are married, they'll abstain from, you know, intercourse for weeks ahead so that they can have their endurance and their strength. And before I even ask him the question, he goes, yeah, not me. He goes, I am the most relaxed when my wife and I are very friendly before a game. And I'm just like going, the guy's just like looking around going, okay, all right. Anyway, but the way he discussed things, and I liked it, and his answer to this was just awesome. Here's what he said. He simply replied, while everyone else is chasing the puck, I go where the puck is going to be. I'm like going, how perfect is that? And I thought about that as I went through and I was doing this. I like when I had the immediate mind picture of Pokey when it used to chase this. We had some friends that had a racing dog. It was an old greyhound. You remember that, Charlotte? And it won all kinds of trophies. And then once it gets the state owned the dogs, after it got so old, they adopted them out. And our friends adopted it. A beautiful dog. And I mean, that they had a backyard that was about about an acre. It was big. And that dog could run the laps around that thing so fast. Well, here's our pug, our oversized pug, chasing after this. And that dog is just running laps around it. And it didn't take long before Pokey started to realize, if I chase after it, I will never catch it. But I know after watching a couple times that this dog does this track in this direction. And so instead of chasing after the dog, she'd go backwards to catch the dog as it would come around, and the dog would just run by and keep going, and she'd stop, and then she'd go backwards again. I'm like going, that's it. We know where it's going to be, so to cut it off and to go, instead of chasing after these things and chasing after the things of this world that are dragging us down and pulling us down and holding us under, then we go, hey, we're going right where the blessings are, right where the promises are. And so when we have the attack, so we get coming on us, we just go, hey, you know what? I'm going to go spread the word. I'm going to go administer healing to somebody right now. And I'm going right where Christ is putting me. Instead of following these things, I'm going to take the lead. And I'm going to take the reins. And I'm going out. I'm doing it. And so I challenge you there for the Gretzky thing to remember that. Not to be chasing after, but to be going where it's going to be. Excuse me. So then what do we see when we look out and we're in those situations like Isaiah when he was there? Do we see ourselves being caught up with Christ in the clouds? Okay? Always easier said to do, you know, said than doing, because when you're in those crises, the last thing you can say, especially, you know, here's a technique not to do when you're in a spouse or fighting, is to throw that out. Hey, do you see yourselves being caught up with Christ in the clouds? Okay, you might duck after not to be hit by something, but we should be looking at this. We should be thinking about this, and we're totally reminding ourselves and have a mental picture that we've already prepared. If you have prepared for all these things, if you've in your mind mentally prepared to raise somebody from the dead, when it happens, I know what to do. I know exactly where to do. I know what scriptures to go to. I know how I have to do this, what I have to do in order to step by step take care of this. Same way, if we are prepared to be caught up in the... But we are waiting for it. And instead of worrying about it, it'd be like a child who has to do all kinds of chores, but they know at the end of the chores, we're going to Disneyland.
Wow.
And the child will keep its mind focused on that fact to carry them through during those tough times because they know it's coming, it's coming, it's coming, it's going to be here. And the same way for us, the same way for Isaiah. He knew what was coming, but he didn't get to see it. He was not there to be able to see it. The same way it was. We may be asleep. Okay, we may have gone to sleep before Christ comes back. However, guess what? We know what our hope is and our promise is. Time's age abiding in paradise. Okay, so when we think about that, you're like going, 6,000 years on this earth is a drop in an ocean compared to time's age abiding. And so where we look at that, we have to keep that focus. Being caught up with the things of this age, this is the alternative. Chasing after that which will not last. The broken dreams, peace, things of this world that will crack, break, fade away, tear us down, and hold us down. Aaron and I were talking about this the other day about that, about how the adversary knows of his defeat. He knows what's going to happen. And I picture it as a drowning person And as people, as he's drowning, anybody who's close to him, she wants trying to pass through the water. Anybody who gets close to the drowning individual, he grabs and pulls him down with him. Okay, he doesn't care. It's to ruin as much and wreck as much. It's like putting somebody into a place where they can do as much damage as possible, and we stop that. We put the stops to him. We put the shackles back on him, and we speak against those things. So, Wendy, I'm going to have you read this, if you wouldn't mind, for me. This was something else that was kind of neat, a story about this guy in Olinco. And this is a guy who's prepared in Olinco. I always love those positive stories. Give my voice a break for a second.
At the university, there was a piano teacher that was simply and affectionately known as Herman. One night at a university concert, a distinguished piano player suddenly became ill while performing an extremely difficult piece. No sooner had the artist retired from the stage when Herman rose from a seat in the audience, walked on stage, sat down at the piano, and with great mastery completed the performance. Later that evening at a party, one of the students asked Herman how he was able to perform such a demanding piece so beautifully without notice and with no rehearsal. He replied, "In 1939, when I was a budding young concert pianist, I was arrested and placed in a Nazi concentration camp. Putting it mildly, the future looked bleak. But I knew that in order to keep the flicker of hope alive that I might someday play again, I needed to practice every day. I began by fingering a piece from my repertoire on my bare board bed late one night. The next night I added a second piece, and soon I was running through my entire repertoire. I did this every night for 5 years, and so it so happens that the piece I played tonight at the concert hall was part of that repertoire. That constant practice is what kept my hope alive. Every day I renewed my hope that I would one day be able to play my music again on a real piano and in freedom."
That's it.
Wow.
That's it. And so this is the whole thing of the being prepared. You're in a tough time and in a crisis, and even during those times, we're still preparing and we're still doing the work that we need to do and keeping our mind fixed on the goal and the prize. And so even for that, you know that a lot of those people were told they would never have freedom. Before they would be set free, they would be killed and assassinated in there. And so at that point, people would give up. Why bother? Why be enslaved and starve myself to death? I'm just going to throw in the towel and give up. And if that's what you believe, then that you can understand why the people would become that way. And so for this guy to be able to separate himself and look forward and keep his mind stable and keep fighting through all that the same way. And that's why the biggest focus is that we are practiced and we are ready to go. So when the tough questions come up, when the tough situations come up, okay, and it might be with our own children or family or loved one, where something comes up, you're already ready to go. You're not looking through the house. Where's this? Where's that? What do I do? You know, it's like if for us when we were in Florida and a hurricane would come, we already had things ready. We knew what would go. We knew when we were going to go. We'd make the determination. They had cutoffs here. By this time, we had to do this. And everything was prepared. Everything was ready to go. It's the same way that we have to be in the Word, that we are prepared, that we know what we know. We know where to show somebody or where to be able to go to it to be able to counter those things that come against us. And be prepared that we are able to dispatch Christ when we are called to do it. And even in those tough times. Because what happens, I think, a lot of time is the same way I use that analogy of the adversary drowning and just grabbing hold of anybody he can. Okay? If we get too close, we get consumed by something else, and now it pulls us from those other things. And so you can almost see that it would almost be intentional to sidetrack somebody before something major is about to happen so that they're consumed with something else, and what was meant to be kind of goes by because, hey, there's something big on the horizon. There's something big coming down the pike, and so let's disturb it. And I think about that with all the different things, the different religions that there are out there, how infiltrated the adversary, because guess what? If he doesn't... He's not looking to win the whole house necessarily if he doesn't think he can. But if he can win a little bit or steal a little bit here and steal a little bit there, okay, I'll take whatever you give me. Whatever you give me, I'm going to take. That's the adversary will do that. And so it's our job to say, you know what? Not from this house. you're cut off. No more. You're not taking from us, and we're going to push you back out in the middle. And on top of that, guess what? I'm going to throw some lead weight your way there, adversary. Help you sink a little bit faster. Okay? Not for me. Not for me you're doing this. And so that's where we have to be prepared when these things come on us, that we defend ourselves and we don't let these things hit us and pull us away from what, the prize that Yahweh's calling us to be into. So we're ready, we have the hope, all the things that keep us focused and in the direction we need to go. To treat every day as a special occasion, to live life with hope, with energy, while we watch and wait on Christ, bringing others to know of this hope of our gracious Creator Yahweh. Let's finish here in 1 Peter.
All right,
you are quick, girl. What page?
138.
All right, good job, guys.
Yeah, I know.
Okay, I'll read this here. 1, verse 3 through 8. Everybody there? Starting in verse 3. Blessed be the God and Father, Yahweh, the Elohim and Father of our Lord Jesus Christ, who according to his great mercy hath regenerated us into a living hope through the resurrection of Jesus Christ, or Yehoshua Mashiach, from among the dead, or Giro from the dead, raised from the dead, awakened from the dead, unto the inheritance incorruptible and undefiled and unfading, reserved in the heavens for you, who in Yahweh's power are being guarded through the faith unto salvation, ready to be revealed in the last ripe time, wherein ye exalt, though for a little, just now if needful, put to grief in manifold temptations, in order that the proving of your faith, much more precious than of gold that perisheth, even though by means of the fire it is proved, may be found unto praise and glory and honor in the revealing of Christ Jesus, or Jesus Christ, Yehoshua Mashiach. Verse 8, whom not having seen ye love, in whom, though at present not looking, but believing, you exult with joy unspeakable and filled with glory. Verse 9, being about to bear away the end of your faith, a salvation of souls. Verse 10, concerning which salvation prophets, whoops, I'm going too far. I was supposed to stop in 8 there, okay? But again with that, that this is our promise, this is our hope, and that we are to focus on those things to redirect our thoughts, redirect everything back to the preparation, that we are ready to go. We don't go into, it was the same way with David, when, you know, with the teaching, as I sat and listened to Elijah's teaching, he tried to put on all the chain mail and everything else. And now, no, it wasn't going to work. It wasn't going to work. And why? To be prepared. And guess what? Oh, he was prepared. How was David prepared?
Lion
and a bear.
Oh, yeah.
Okay? That's pretty good. He worked his way through. Okay? He had no fear. Okay? A bear or a lion compared to Goliath was minuscule. But he attacked the same way because he knew what was going out before him. That's the same way we have to do that. We will slay our adversary, and guess what? We will defend you back the same way that the light will cast out the darkness, that we will speak that light, and that light will shun away those things. And so when those things start to creep in, and we see them creeping in and coming in against us, that we speak that light and bring it out. So, okay. I will go ahead and close here with a word. For those watching, Yahweh, we thank you for this evening. We thank you again for the rain and for the teaching, for everything you've given us, for your written word, for your spoken word, for the children who are exercising the faith and standing before you to be well-pleasing, that and you see a great smile upon your face as you watch the obedience and just a bowing down before you of another generation, mm-hmm. another generation that we raise up that reveres you and loves you, loves your word and your laws and your commandment and your son. And we thank you, Christ, for being our head, and that the price that you paid for us, that we have your authority, and that we are to do the things that you did and more, that you have told us that we would do all these things and more. And so we look for these things and we stand bold and firm that even when we do feel afraid, or when we feel that it's too overwhelming or too much has come down upon us, that we do this with even stumbling, we say that I will do this with no fear. I even trembling, I will stand and I will be bold, and I will stand and I will be bold. And we will tell ourselves over and over again that we will see these things, that we'll have the mind picture already ready for the time times that these things come about, that we are ready to do the battle, and that we stand out coming before you, Yahweh, that we are armed, ready to go. And so we are with our spiritual armor ready to stand in the gap. And so we thank you for that. We thank you for the words that you give us, that you direct us and fill us to for comfort and exhortation. We just thank you for that, for all these believers and anybody who watches either live now or in the future. We just intercede for them, for peace within them, and for them just to find great joy in the words that you've given to them, that they seek you out through your word and through your principles and your son Christ Jesus. So we thank you for this all. My children, let yourself fall down and fall down vulnerable, that as you do this, that you reveal the tender sides of yourself. That is, as you reveal these tender sides, you are unshackling these things, these barriers that you put up, barriers to protect yourself, to shut away those things, those fearful things of other people or something you try to conceal or hide. And I'm telling you to remove those things, to remove those coverings from off you, to bear yourself. Hold to me, that I am able to see you, that I'm able to come before you, and that as you call upon me, that I will hear your words, and I will hear your words as you fall with me in obedience, and that you seek me out. And so as I see you calling to me and questioning things, I call for you to search out my word and my scriptures, that I will stir your heart, and I will stir within your mind, and I will give you visions, and I will give you peace and justice that you seek. And find me always, that as you are not as just a gift bearer, but I am here also to hear from you and to counsel you and to comfort you even in this fallen world. Know that there is wonderful things being built, things that are without comprehension to you, without comprehension to my prophets of old, that I gave them visions that they wrote down the best way they could and still fell short of what glory I have for you. So come before me, that I may be able to reveal to you, and I may be able to write your name in the book.